Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Today is Saturday, January 13th. Americans are about to cast their first votes of the 2024 election season, choosing who they want to represent their party in the race for president. The Iowa caucuses are just 2 days away now, and New Hampshire's primary is set for 1 week later. And this year is set to look a bit different. Democrats are making changes to the election schedule, and Republicans are waiting to find out whether their frontrunner will even be on the ballot in some states. To help us unpack it all, we're talking with my friends Sarah Stewart Holland and Beth Silvers. They're the co-hosts of the popular podcast Pantsuit Politics, named one of Apple Podcasts' best in 2021. The political commentators also have law degrees and have written two books, Now What? How to Move Forward When You're Divided About Basically Everything. And I Think You're Wrong, But I'm Listening. Today, they're offering some analysis of the political environment and candidates heading into the first caucuses and primaries of the season. And later, they break down some of the basics about how next week's caucus works and remind us all why any of this really matters. Welcome, welcome to the Newsworthy Special Edition Saturday, when we sit down with a different expert or celebrity every Saturday to talk about something in the news. Don't forget to tune in every Monday through Friday for our regular episodes, where we provide all the day's news in 10 minutes. I'm Erica Mandy. It's now time for today's Special Edition Saturday. Sarah and Beth, welcome back to the Newsworthy. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Always so good to be with you, Erica.
All right, so let's start with the big picture. How would you describe the feeling of the nation or the political environment heading into the 2024 election season? Beth, why don't we start with you?
The word that comes to mind for me is tense. I think that voters are becoming more aware of where the primaries sit with some amount of disbelief. I hear a number of commentators say, you know, we'll do a focus group, and people will say, but like, you really think it's going to be Trump and Biden? And then I think close political observers feel the tension around the really significant legal challenges surrounding former President Trump, both civil and criminal, as well as the hard reality that however well the Biden campaign organizes, messages, connects with voters, his age is a prevalent and immovable concern for people.
Perhaps for the first time in my lifetime, I feel like definitely a majority, if not 75 to 80% of the sort of political rules we understood to be true about presidential elections are just no longer applicable. My first presidential election was Bush v. Gore, so it's not like I haven't lived through some pretty interesting historical scenarios, but I feel like even in that election, there was just some foundational principles that the political class in particular, but most Americans, felt to be true. And I just think as we get closer and closer to 2024, and I think that's the tension Beth is naming, we can all see people who are super dialed into presidential elections, people who don't pay that close of attention can feel like there's just a lot different here.
Do you think that some of those issues that we historically see matter to people, economy, abortion, immigration, that those will play a role, or have people made up their minds?
I do think the issues could come into play in terms of who is motivated to show up and vote, not for whom they vote, but whether they vote at all. Certainly, I think if something caused the price of gas to increase dramatically, if some really compelling story about abortion broke through and reminded people that Roe versus Wade was overturned by a conservative court for which former President Trump has taken credit, you know, if something like that becomes very present of mind near the election and it alters the turnout, that's where I think the issues will come into play more than the two people on the ballot here. But it's difficult because we know these two people. And so we're not in the kind of discovery mode that we often are in an election cycle.
And Beth, you brought up President Biden's age. Do you think that the alternative Dean Phillips is going to play a role at all or have any sort of chance? I mean, and I also want to explain for people, there have been some questions about, you know, is he going to take votes away from Biden? So let's explain why he's not, that this is part of the primary, as well as what you think about this alternative candidate.
I think Dean Phillips probably embarked on this campaign in order to invite others to do the same so that the Democratic Party would have a more lively contested primary and a real airing of everyone's thoughts on President Biden's age. That has not happened. And I think that it is going to be very difficult to engage Democratic voters in sufficient numbers for the contested primary to actually be contested.
Even though I know a CBS News poll last month found while a majority of Democrats do want Biden to run again, more than a third of Democrats don't think he should run. Do those numbers surprise you?
I don't think they're surprising. You know, it's back to those, which of the old rules will still apply? Because the old rule, true in President Trump's first term, is that a incumbent president challenged in their own party primary often does not win the general. But that's when the choice is old guard versus new challenger. Well, that's not what we have this time. We have old guard versus old guard. And I think of so many places where this idea we had that we're all partisan, sort of what you articulated, people have already decided we can't change their minds. And yet all these old political rules that follow that reasoning were broken. Like a president in his first term usually loses seats in the midterm. President Biden didn't lose seats in 2022. Like the fact that you have states like ours in Kentucky that is as red can be during the general, but elected and then reelected a Democratic governor. So I think there's all these interesting places where there are surprises. How much should we treat as unique? And how much do we treat something as unique to our detriment because we can't really see the patterns in place? I think that that's the real struggle right now in American politics, but particularly in this presidential.
So let's shift to former President Trump. Do you think at the end of the day, these legal battles are helping or hurting him?
He is rewarded within the Republican Party for his doubling down on the revenge and the challenging and the all that strategy that worked the first time, right? Like he is rewarded within the Republican Party. He is more powerful within that party than he has been ever. But he has continued to reap negative electoral consequences. Obviously, he lost his reelection. The Republican Party lost seats in the midterm in 2022. But I think he'll continue to follow that, whatever the consequences are electorally.
And we know he's facing criminal and civil cases that are going to be ongoing throughout this process. But one of the most immediate potential impacts is whether or not he's going to be showing up on the ballots here in the primaries. So to remind our listeners, Colorado and Maine issued rulings that banned Trump from the ballot in those states. Other states are continuing to try. Some have tried and failed with the argument that he's ineligible since the 14th Amendment prohibits anyone who engages in insurrection to hold office, referring to the Capitol riot and his potential his role. The appeals process is now expected to go to the U.S. Supreme Court. What do you think voters are making about all of this and the potential impact? Do you think it will be resolved before we start seeing primaries in those states? What's your take on all of this going on?
I think those ballot access cases will be resolved before people go to the polls. I think voters right now don't know what to make of those cases. And I've spent the morning in the Colorado decision. There are over 200 pages of opinions from the Colorado Supreme Court. These are very complex cases. It makes sense to me that we have contrary decisions from states about this. We should be telling people that's normal. Lots of issues of constitutional law get to the Supreme Court because states have decided them differently. This is how our system's supposed to work. It's frustrating. It feels very stressful. But ultimately, we should be glad that we have a court system that can take what elected officials and voters and lower courts have done and give us some clarity.
After looking through it, I mean, do you have thoughts on which way the Supreme Court may go on this one?
I do not, Erica. I went into this with a strong bias against disqualifying former President Trump from the ballot. My feeling has been that ultimately our country is best served by voters deciding the question. I came out softer on that because I think the arguments in favor of disqualification were more compelling than the arguments against it. So I don't even know in my own mind if I had to decide this question what I would say. I cannot guess at what the court will do. My personal hope around all of this is that we all keep the temperature as low as we can keep it. I don't want to be torn apart over this issue.
So what exactly is changing in this year's races? And why is there so much talk about which state gets to go first? Beth and Sarah explain. And they have some inspiration for anyone feeling exhausted by the political atmosphere. That's all coming up. But first, a quick break for our sponsors. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. In 2024, I am doing well to avoid any extreme New Year's resolutions or obsessing about what I need to improve. Yes, I'm always looking to be the best version of myself, but I'm doing that by simply recognizing all that I'm already doing well and working toward improving the small stuff that would help even more. And therapy continues to support me in that process. I really do think of it like going to the gym or a personal trainer, but for my mental health. And honestly, how we think and feel impacts everything else in our lives. So if you're thinking about trying therapy, BetterHelp is an easy way to get started. It's online only and designed to be convenient, flexible, and work with your schedule. You can talk with your therapist through messaging, phone, or video. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can always switch for no extra charge to ensure you get the right fit. Celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit betterhelp.com/newsworthy today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/newsworthy. This episode is also brought to you by Green Chef. I know this time of year, building healthy habits can be top of mind. So one easy way to eat clean and conveniently is with Green Chef. Green Chef takes the work out of eating better with chef-crafted, nutritionist-approved recipes featuring certified organic fruits and veggies, organic cage-free eggs, and sustainably sourced seafood. And Green Chef delivers everything you need. In fact, Green Chef is now owned by HelloFresh, so with a wider array of meal plans to choose from, there's something for everyone. I personally appreciate that I don't have to worry about a last-minute run to the grocery store. Instead, I have doable, delicious recipes alongside all the ingredients I need for a meal I can feel good about feeding to myself and my family. Like we recently enjoyed cheesy pesto chicken bowls with sauteed squash noodles and balsamic tomato topping. Yum. So go to greenchef.com/60newsworthy and use the code 60newsworthy to get 60% off plus 20% off your next 2 months. Again, that's 60% off plus 20% off your next 2 months when you go to greenchef.com/60newsworthy and use code 60newsworthy. Okay, now back to our conversation. So regardless of who is on the ballot, let's talk about the first elections coming up, primaries and caucuses. First, give us a brief explanation of what those are and what we typically can expect from the first races.
A primary is what we typically think of as an election. You show up, you get a ballot, you select your choice, the votes are counted, the person with the most votes advances. The caucus format varies by state, but it is a more consensus-driven process. It's typically a more decentralized process. I think as we consider primaries and caucuses, what we need to remember is that the parties ultimately choose these candidates through delegates at their conventions, and they make the rules for how they do it. And they can change those rules. This process is a creative one, always, and especially so this year. And it's been well reported that the Trump campaign has quite successfully lobbied state and local party officials to have the rules written in a manner that would most benefit former President Trump going into the Republican primaries and caucuses, going into the Republican convention. On the Democratic side, the Biden campaign and the DNC have thought more about how they want the Democratic Party to present itself to the nation. They know that the last Iowa caucus was a difficult one. It took a number of days to get the results out. People felt like it was a little bit disorganized, a little bit of a disaster. And because of that, and because they want a more inclusive and diverse electorate to have the first say in their contest, they're shifting the first primary to South Carolina. New Hampshire isn't pleased about that. We don't know how Iowa will respond. So there are a lot of question marks hanging over the first votes that will be cast going into these conventions.
Why does it matter to go first?
It matters mostly because of momentum. because the people who go first get the most media coverage. Sarah and I attended an Iowa caucus in the last election cycle, and we saw, just being in Des Moines for a few days, that there were more reporters than residents by a lot. There's so much to focus on in those early stages, and that's the first information that a lot of people get about these contests. Very few people, relative to the number of folks eligible to vote in the general election, are following the debates and the ups and downs and who's in and out of the primary process until people actually start voting. So those first couple of states decide a lot about attention, about fundraising, and about what the momentum is going into the bigger, you know, Super Tuesday type days when you have a number of states voting.
And pragmatically, for those states, when the entire national media comes to your state, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of hotels. That's a lot of meals. It's a boon to a lot of local economies. It's also political power. That's why everybody cares, you know, nationally about ethanol. Well, it's because Iowa's first on the calendar and ethanol is very important in Iowa. So there's a lot of power under a lot of different sort of rubrics, economically, politically, culturally, to being first, to being the place that everybody's paying attention to being the place. I mean, these candidates spend months, almost a year, like basically living in Iowa, meeting everyone in Iowa. And I think it becomes a part of the state's identity that we are important in the process and we take that responsibility very seriously.
So Iowa Democrats are playing ball with the Democratic Party by holding off on releasing their results until later, until Super Tuesday. But New Hampshire was not really playing ball and essentially said, too bad, we're still going to be the first primary. And now President Biden is not even going to be on the ballot in New Hampshire. Did that response surprise you at all? And what's the potential impact there?
We talked to one of our activist, longtime party leaders in Iowa. And she was talking about, well, this is an interesting year because it feels normal, even though all these pieces are changing, because it's an incumbent president. So it's not like there would be this huge campaign infrastructure in Iowa for the Democratic Party this year anyway. So I there's a part of me that thinks, like, yes, there's all these changes, but we won't really know how this shakes out as far as the Democratic side until we have an open primary and not an incumbent. And so I think sort of watching what New Hampshire does, what Iowa does, like, it's important and it's applicable in a way, but until we don't have an incumbent president, we won't really know what that's going to look like. And I think the reality is that this idea that we'll settle and the calendar will stay the same for several cycles as it has in the, you know, the 80s and the 90s and the early aughts is probably gone. My gut says that we'll be changing many things more often than we have in the past.
Is there anything else that you all are hearing that you think is important to add? Or just, you know, what do you hope voters keep in mind throughout this 2024 election season as we wrap up here today?
I hope voters keep in mind that more than the president will be elected, that control of Congress is very much up for grabs, that state and local officials who impact everyone's lives dramatically are on the ballot. I worry sometimes, and especially in this election, that there is a vibe of resignation or apathy or just general malaise, because presidential elections can feel exhausting and overwhelming. And I just want people to remember that there are going to be lots of choices in front of them, and their votes will really matter around those choices. And so it's worth sticking with it and investigating those down ballot races and showing up for them, even if you don't love where the presidential is going.
We have real power inside our democracy, and that it is a historical experiment that we get to participate in that is incredibly important and incredibly valuable. And the urgent can overwhelm the important, especially in a presidential year, that we get caught up in the most important election of our lifetimes. And they're always the most important election of our lifetime. And that's true. They are always the most important in the election of our lifetime. But the fact that we get to do this, that the stakes are high every time and we get to participate, I'm so grateful for that. Even when it's stressful, even when it's overwhelming, even when it's annoying, even when it's scary, it's still a gift and one that I hope people recognize and don't take for granted.
Well, thank you so much to Beth Silvers and Sarah Stewart Holland for taking time to share their expertise with us today. New episodes of their podcast, Pantsuit Politics, come out every Tuesday and Friday. And be sure to check out their books as we head into a contentious election season to help you keep your cool. They're called Now What? How to Move Forward When You're Divided About Basically Everything. And I Think You're Wrong, But I'm Listening. Of course, we'll be keeping you updated on all the key happenings as elections get underway right here on The Newsworthy during our regular weekday episodes. Our 10-minute news roundups are available in any audio app every Monday through Friday morning. So we'll be back on Monday. Until then, have a great weekend.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.